All right, we're on lesson 10 in Judges, the third chapter. We're picking up where Eric left off. See if we can get through this tonight. We've got ways to go and see if we can finish everything up here. The children of Israel forsook the Lord, and they began to serve Balaam and Asherah, or Asheroth. That's the god that is the female part of Baal, more or less. And so God sold them into the hands of Cushan-Rishathaim from Mesopotamia. We find that in the third chapter and verse 7. Children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and forgot the Lord their God, and served Balaam and the groves. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them to the hands of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. We need to remember what Joshua had told them along this line. Do you remember? They served other gods. What? God's going to give them up, give them over, and they were going to be ruled by others and what have you. A little bit about Cushan-Rishathaim. You may pronounce that different than I do. I don't know. But anyway, he was a man from Cush. And he was, you might say, a twofold crime in the way he did things. The King James Version, Cushan-Rishathaim, mentioned him in Judges, the third chapter, verse 8 through 10. It's the king of Mesopotamia, which means between the rivers. That's what Mesopotamia means. He was chosen of God as his tool. Chosen as his tool to chastise the Israelites for their idolatry. And after Joshua's death, the children of Israel soon began to affiliate themselves with the heathen people among whom they dwelt. This was the fertile source of all their troubles. God delivered or sold them into the hands of the heathen. Cushan-Rishathaim is the first whose name is given in this connection. Barring this short passage in Judges, nothing is known of the man. Eight years the Israelites were under his dominion. Then the Lord raised up a deliverer to them. His name was Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, the first of the judges. Israel cried to the Lord, and he raised them up a Savior. The Spirit of the Lord came upon Othniel, and he defeated Cushan-Rishathaim. Usually think of Judges as a time of war in Israel. But, in essence, it was not war throughout the land. It was just in certain areas. And we'll kind of look at that in a little while. There were some overlapping of the judges. Some ruled at the same time the others did. We don't really have a record to prove that, but the time frame, number of years that they had peace and those kind of things kind of leads us to know that some of them kind of overlapped just a little bit. After a victory by Israel, there would be peace for many years, generally in those particular areas where that particular war was actually taking place. So why was it important to have control of Israel? There had to be a reason why, a physical reason, why Cushan-Rishathaim would want to come and take Israel, besides the fact that God sent him. Why would he want Israel? For slaves? Trade routes. That's a very important thing, the trade routes. And that's exactly what I had down, is that. This is Mesopotamia, all up through here. And I've got another one here that actually shows the trade routes. If you'll watch this little dot real closely, it'll give you one of the trade routes. You've got to watch close, because it moves in a hurry. Well, it didn't move. Sorry. Supposed to have moved. Didn't do it. That's the way it goes. Anyway, the trade routes actually go across here, and one of them comes on this side of the Jordan, and down this way, and the other one comes across and down through this part of Israel, down this way, down into Egypt. All right, that didn't work, but anyway. All right. of course, that points out also the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. Okay? All right. Othniel lived in the central to southern part of Judah. And Othniel may have met Cush-Rishathaim as his army came in to conquer the cities. We don't know exactly where this particular conflict took place. We don't know exactly where that happened. But we only know that Jehovah delivered him into the hand of Othniel. I don't have to be any more said than that, but that's all we know. And there was peace for about 40 years in those regions. And this is kind of particular from the central part of Judah, which would be along about Hebron. And if he came down the trade route, came down this way, they could have had the conflict somewhere on the western part of the Jordan. We just don't know for sure where it was, but that's a general idea of where it could take place. Israel, again, did evil in the sight of the Lord. We're going to see this just over and over and over throughout the judges. And it's just, it's really sickening to think about it. But it just seemed like one was over and another one would take over and another one would happen. But they did evil in the sight of the Lord. So he sent Eglon, the king of the Moabites, along with the Amorites and the Amalekites against Israel. Remember where the Moabites live? Southeast of, okay, down below Reuben. Very good, good. Okay, the Amorites, east of the Jordan, basically. Okay, and the Amalekites. Okay, some were down that way, but these were actually further over to the east, I think, that joined in with these particular ones here. Okay, good. They seized the city of palm trees. That was the old site of Jericho, not named Jericho, it was the city of palm trees. So they seized that, and Israel served Eglon for 18 years. Many of the Moabites had moved to the west side from the east side of Jordan. They'd moved over into the land of Israel, basically. And they were taken over, you might say. Do you remember who Moab and Ammon were? Moab and Ammon. Sons of Lot. By who? By his daughters. Very good. All right. These were, and of course we know where Moab and Ammon, Moab became the Moabites and Ammon became the Ammonites. All right. The Amalekites were one of the tribes from the desert. Same ones that attacked Israel at Rephidim. When they left Egypt. Remember that story? Remember when they left Egypt? What the Amalekites did? Really stirred up God's anger against them. Okay? Let's look at this. This is a very important thing. Exodus 17, 8 through 16. The main one I want to look at is verse 14 there. Read that for us, Brent. 17, verse 14. Exodus 17, 14. So, what could these people have done that was so bad? Let's look at Deuteronomy, the 25 and 17. Got that? 17 through 19. Got it? Almost there? Okay. I hear you. Okay. 17 through 19. All right. Did you notice what he had done? He had attacked Israel from behind. Of course, the people who were weak and feeble, elderly people, had trouble walking, those kind of things, that's the kind of people that he attacked and killed in Israel here at Rephidim. That's what he's talking about. And God was thoroughly upset with it. And so we know what happened in 1 Samuel 15, verse 3. What happened there? Saul went down and he destroyed Amalekites, except for King. Yeah, and of course he was killed a little bit later. But anyway, this gives you an idea when God says, I'm going to take care of these people, he's going to do it. You know, he's not going to forget it. So keep that in mind why this all happened. Yes. Right.
They were
That should have been done before Saul came. That's right. Yes, yes, that's right. That's exactly right. But anyway, they had lived in part of the Sinai Peninsula, the southern part, and they are now in alliance with Moab, Ammon, and the eastern plateau. So, we find that the children of Israel cried out to Jehovah for deliverance. Jehovah sends Ehud from the tribe of Benjamin to save Israel. Ehud was the one by whom Israel was sending tribute money over to Eglon. Now, where had Eglon and them gone to? What place had they taken? The old site of Jericho, okay? The city of palm trees, yeah. Okay? So, that may have been where he was actually stationed or set up camp or whatever. But anyway, Ehud was a left-handed man. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of people back in those days evidently left-handed. This one is mentioned because of what is going to transpire. But anyway, he made him a double-edged sword about 18 inches long. And he's going to use it. As he prepared to take the tribute to Eglon, he strapped his sword to his right side. Strap his sword over here. Normally, a person would be right-handed and he would strap his sword on the left side and pull it out to use it. The left-handed man would go the other way. So, Ehud's sword would not be as noticeable under his clothing and strapped to his right side. You know, 18-inch sword, you'd think that would stick out or whatever, but underneath your clothing, it wouldn't be as noticeable. And they would more or less look on the left side. You know, the guards or whoever would be protecting the king. So after Ehud and the other ones had gone in, give him the tribute money, and that was what was happening. Israel was having to pay tribute to this king because he had captured them, you know, basically. And so they was having to pay taxes, you might say. But tribute money, that's what it basically is. And so Ehud, after they had given the tribute money, Ehud started back home with the other Israelites that had gone with him. But when he got to a quarry near Gilgal, then he turned back. And he went back to see Eglon. He went to his quarters and told that, "I've got a secret for the king." Well, as soon as the king heard that, he said, "Keep quiet. Tell anybody else. And you come on in and privately you tell it to me." So, the king ordered all of his attendants out. "Y'all get on out. This man's got some business with me." Ehud came in to him. And Eglon was sitting alone in his cool upper room with only him and Ehud there. And Eglon was a very fat man. Now, I know I'm a pretty good size, but evidently this guy was much bigger than I am. Because I don't think what Ehud did to him would happen to me. Don't think. But Ehud said, "I've got a message for you from God." And at that moment, then Ehud pulled out his sword, stuck it deep into Eglon's body, and the fat closed around the sword. You know, 18 inches. It might hide in me, I don't know, but that's a pretty long, 18 inches, pretty long sword, you know, dagger, we call it today, I guess. Anyway, Ehud left it there, and he went out of the room by the porch. He locked the doors and fled. And you wonder just exactly how he kept him from hollering out even when he stuck him. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I don't know. He may have gagged him or something. I don't know. But that's beside the point. The servants of Eglon found the door locked, and they thought he was in there basically using the restrooms. That's kind of the way Bob Cook leaves it, and relieving himself or whatever. So they waited for a long time, and so long that they felt guilty about leaving him there by himself, and they still hadn't seen Ehud either, you know, one of the enemies. So they finally unlocked the door, and there they found him. He was dead. And so I'm sure they really felt guilty after that. Ehud had made his way back to the hill country of Ephraim, And says that he blew the trumpet calling the Israelites to him for war. He told them to follow him because Jehovah has delivered your enemies, the Moabites, into your hands. Israel killed every Moabite that they came in contact with as they came to the Jordan and crossed the Jordan in that particular region. The number came to be about 10,000 at that point. Israel then had rest for 80 years after this happened. It's a good story to tell to young people. I know there's some graphic things in it, but you don't have to dwell on those, you know, when you tell it to the children. But anyway, this is kind of the oppression. This is the old city of Jericho and the route that Ehud took to get to that area, possibly. And then, of course, they went to the Jordan and killed a lot of the Moabites in that region as well. Next, we learn about Shamgar. After Ehud came Shamgar, the son of Anath. He killed 600 men of the Philistines with an ox goad and saved Israel. What is an ox goad? David, do you have any idea what ox goad is? We don't use ox goads anymore. They used those when they were using oxen to plow the fields. And every now and then you get an old ornery ox that just wouldn't go. And so they had a long pointed stick as they, you know, would guide the plows or whatever. And they would poke that ox. Of course, he would get on then, you know. But that was an ox goad. That's basically what it was. It was just a long pointed stick. It may have been iron. I don't really know for sure. But anyway, it was something long and pointed. It got the attention of the ox. What it was. But we're not told much else about Shamgar, other than that he saved Israel with an ox goad, and he killed 600 men with it. So, you know, not a whole lot more. So when did he live? Not sure about that either. And what was the circumstances that caused it? Just know that he was sent by God as a judge, and he killed 600 men of the Philistines and saved Israel. Well, that's all we need to know, I guess. Deborah actually refers to him in the song that she writes over in Judges, the 5th chapter, talking about in the days of Shamgar, the caravans ceased. Think of when you think of the caravan ceasing. Travelers went by roundabout ways. They didn't follow the main highways, basically. And that may have been what the Philistines were doing. They may have been stopping all the traffic and trade and those kind of things and killing people that were traveling and those kind of things is the reason people went byways and so forth to get through. Paid money to get through. Yeah, that's what was happening to our ship today, wasn't it? Over to Somalia, whatever. Okay. Shamgar brought some relief to Israel, not a lot. They didn't have total deliverance from the Philistines at this particular time. Deborah indicates that the situation of danger in Shamgar's day was not completely alleviated until in her time, Judges chapter 5. It was alleviated later on. Her tenure as judge was related more to Ehud and not to Shamgar, according to chapter 4 and verse 1. This is the first time that the Philistines were mentioned as enemies of Israel. Okay? We know that it's only the beginning of a long conflict that's going to take place between Israel and the Philistines. We're going to read of this a lot, Philistine armies. There have been Philistines in the land since the days of Abraham. Genesis 20, we read of who they were descendants from. You remember who they were descendants from? Anybody? Ham. Descendants of Ham. God chose not to go through their land, if you remember, when they left on the Exodus out of Egypt. Did not go through the land of the Philistines. Why? End of war. Very good. All right. Philistines were not named as a major threat by Moses when he started naming off all of these different people, the Amorites, the Jebusites, and he started naming all of them. The Philistines were not in that number when Moses started naming all those people. They were of the same bloodline as the Canaanites, the Egyptians, the descendants of Ham. We find that in Genesis 10, verse 14. Their primary home seemed to be the island of Crete off the Mediterranean coast. I didn't put a map on of that, but I'll see if I can do a little bit. The island of Crete was right in this area right here. And, of course, the land of the Philistines, you know, is down in this area down in here. Got a map of that later on. After the victory of Shamgar, more of the Philistines probably came in from Crete down in to resettle into the Philistine area. Gaza, and several Ziklag, several other ones down in that area. Philistines are named as one of the people that God left, that Eric brought out in Judges 3, verse 3, to test Israel, see if they would get all these people out. And they were left there by God to test them. Philistines fought for control of the whole southern part of the land of Israel. They wanted that whole area. And that's one reason that they had so much trouble between Israel and the Philistines. They were not actually subdued until the days of David. And that 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 17 through 25. We know the many, many stories of David as he dealt with the Philistines. Of course, one major one. You remember one in particular? Ah, very good. That's right. And they were only subject for brief times, even after this particular period. There's the map of basically the Philistine territory. And all these names, Gath, Ziklag, and all these other ones up through here, I think Apek may have been a part of that, was he? It seems like it was, I'm not sure. But anyway, you'll be reading about David dealing with some of these particular cities and other ones as well. Israel turned from God again, and so he sends Jabin, king of Canaan, against them. Canaanites were also kin to who? We just said something about kin to who? Hear you. Huh? Philistine, okay. All right. Canaan was also one of the sons of Ham, by the way. He reigned in Hazor. Remember where Hazor was? In the northern part. It's just south of Lake Hula. His captain was named Sisera, who dwelt in Harosheth Goim. I guess that's the way you pronounce it. The oppression was severe. He was had a lot of authority. He had 900 chariots of iron, his army. You know, that's like having 5 million fighter jets today, I guess. I don't know, you know. We'll try to make some kind of comparison. In other words, he was a very, very strong. He had something besides iron as well. But anyway, he ruled 20 years with a hand of iron over Israel. Israel cried to Jehovah. They'd done this before. I mean, I told you, we're going to read this over and over and again, where they would turn to idols, cry to the Lord, you know, after they've been oppressed, and Jehovah would send a judge. Hazor, there it is, right up there, just south of Lake Hila. Harosheth Goim, somewhere in this region. Some of the maps have it up in here as well. You'll see that in other maps that I have here as well. Depression is from the Canaanites, the people who Israel already subdued earlier. They had already put them down, and now they're coming back. Many years have passed since Joshua's days, and now the king rules over the Canaanites and Hazor. His name is Jabin, same as back in Joshua 11, verse 1. This will be the last time that the Canaanites will be a threat to Israel. When this is all said and done, won't bother Israel anymore. Their gods actually bring the downfall to Israel. Of course, this is Hazor. This is the Jezreel Valley. Goes out to, what's this place? Come on, speak out. Mount Carmel. Very good. All right, the Jezreel Valley. Also, the Kishon River flows down through here as well. So keep that in mind. That's going to be a major place that's going to be get real busy here shortly. Here, Lake Hula, his captain, Sisera, up near Harosheth Goim, near the border of Asher and Zebulun, somewhere in that area. Maybe a term, Harosheth may be a term for wooded mountain, wooded area. Not one of the things Bob had brought out. The oppression was primarily against the tribes in the north. Okay? So those down in Judah, down that way, were not affected by this particular time. And somewhere up in this region where I got this little star is somewhere in Asher Zebulun area where it actually Harosheth Goim is. Deborah, the next judge, married a man named Lappidoth. Just don't hear that name a lot, you know? Lappidoth, a man that is not well known. He lived beneath the palm tree between Ramah and Bethel. Children of Israel came to her for judgment. Made judgments. There's like a judge today, you know, you go to a judge. And she lived miles from the area. Actually, it was under affliction. Soldiers were called from Naphtali, Zebulun, to actually come and help in this particular battle. And we see that in chapter 5, 13, 14, and some others from other tribes also helped out. And I'm not sure the other ones close by might have been Asher, maybe some from Manasseh maybe came and helped as well in this battle that took place right in this region right here. Mount Tabor was one of the... they got Zebulun down here, and Zebulun is actually in this particular region up here. People that drew the map didn't know what they're doing. Deborah sends for Barak, the son of Abinoam, and told him that Jehovah has commanded for you to go to Tabor with 10,000 men, go against Sisera, the captain of Jabin's army. So I, Jehovah, will deliver him into your hands. That's what he was told. Barak tells Deborah, I'll only go if you go. I'm not going to go by myself. Deborah said, I'll go, but the honor will not be to you. Honor will be to someone else. And it actually will be given to a woman. Deborah tells him that. So they went together to battle against Sisera. And this is the area, Mount Tabor, is where he was actually to go. And this river, River Kishon, is a major, major thing in this battle. Sisera learned that Israel had gathered for war. And he took his chariots and soldiers to the River Kishon. And Deborah tells Barak to go forth against Sisera. He will be delivered into your hands. And Barak and his army went down, headed down the mountain, Mount Tabor. This was a day of much rain that had happened. The River Kishon swept away many of the chariots. Okay? You would think there were some other ones besides iron, according to this. Iron ones may not have swept away as quickly. But the others became, as they were in iron, they couldn't go up the slopes of Mount Tabor to fight against Barak. They couldn't get up the slopes. Remember what Mount Tabor looked like? Pretty steep little mountain there. And you can see why chariots would not be able to go up there. This is looking from the Jezreel Valley up towards Mount Tabor. And I'm not sure where the Kishon River went. A lot of times a tree line will be down, you know, along a river. But I'm not sure that's it down through there. It doesn't really show that. But if indeed that would be the case, you can see how it could flood very easily with a lot of rain. And it could be a very wide stream if that indeed is the particular area. And how some of them could be washed away. Sisera jumped from his chariot. Obviously, he wouldn't move. Stuck in the mud. If he was in an iron chariot, he couldn't move. And so he jumps out. And Barak and his men pursue him and his soldiers. Sisera fled north toward Harosheth Goim. Why would he go there? That's his home. Yeah, that's right. Sisera however, ran towards the east, the Kadesh Naphtali. And Perisheth Gohan is up in this region. They got it down here. I put it up into this region. I'm not sure exactly where it's at, but anyway, I think it's probably in that area. Kadesh Naphtali is along in this region in here. And that's where David went. Sisera ran to the tent of Heber, the Kenite. Who were the Kenites? We talked about that Sunday. Who? Kinfolks of Moses' brothers, folks. Okay. All right. Judges 1:16 reminds us that this is the children of Moses' father-in-law who had moved from the southwest. We talked about that's where they were when just less than Sunday in Judah, but they moved up to Kadesh Naphtali. Some of them did. Sisera goes into the tent of Heber, asks for some water. He'd been fleeing from Barak. He said, I need some water. And Jael, the wife of Heber, gave him milk to drink. And he told her, he said, you watch the door, and I'm going to lay down and rest. So he actually lays down and rests. She covers him up, and he goes soundly to sleep. Probably just give out. And while Sisera was asleep, Jael took a tent pin. You know what a tent pin is? Long stakes that hooks to the rope that holds the tent down. High winds and that kind of thing. Some of them pretty long, you know. Drove it through his temple all the way into the ground. Say, some of these things are graphic, but, you know, kids love graphic things, you know. You don't believe it, you just look at some of the video games they play. A little while later, Barak and his men came along, and Jael goes out to meet them. Says, the man you're looking for, right in here. I got him. Had him pinned down. They entered in and found Sisera dead, just as Deborah had said the honor would go to a woman for the victory of this battle. Did. And she is recorded in the Bible throughout the ages. So, in mind. God brought Jabin and the Canaanites under control. They were finally destroyed by Israelites. This may have been the first series. We're not real sure. The battle ended with the death of Jabin at some point in time. And whether there were some other battles or not, it doesn't matter. God gave the victory over to Israel. Destroyed the Canaanites. Now, Deborah writes a song, chapter 5. And it's all about these things that took place. Praise ye the Lord for the avenging of Israel, when the people willingly offered themselves. Hear, O ye kings, give ear, O ye princes. I will sing unto the Lord. I will sing praise to the Lord God of Israel. Lord, when thou wentest out of Seir, where was Seir? Mount Seir, that was down, way down, okay? When thou marchest out of the field of Edom, the earth trembled, the heavens dropped, the clouds also dropped water. The mountains melted from before the Lord, even that Sinai from before the Lord God of Israel. The days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, in the days of Jael, the highways were unoccupied. That tells you a little bit more about the highways people didn't use. The travelers walked through byways. The inhabitants of the villages ceased. They ceased in Israel until Deborah arose. And arose a mother in Israel. They chose new gods. Then was war in the gates. Was there a shield or spear seen among 40,000 in Israel? My heart is toward the governors of Israel that offered themselves willingly among the people. Bless ye the Lord. Speak, ye that ride on white asses, ye that sit in judgment, walk by the way, they that are delivered from the noise of the archer, places of drawing water. There shall they rehearse the righteous acts of the Lord, even the righteous acts toward the inhabitants of his villages in Israel. Then shall the people of the Lord go down to the gates. Awake, awake, Deborah, awake, awake, utter a song. Arise, Barak, and lead thy captivity captive, thou son of Abinoam. Then he made him that remaineth have dominion over the nobles among the people. The Lord made me have dominion over the mighty. Out of Ephraim was there a root of them against Amalek. After thee, Benjamin, among thy people, out of Maker, came down governors, and out of Zebulun, they that handled the pen of writers. Princes of Issachar were with Deborah, even Issachar, and also Barak. He was sent on foot into the valley. For the division of Reuben, there were great thoughts of heart. Why abodest thou among the sheepfold to hear the bleating of the flock? For the division of Reuben, there were great searching of heart. Gilead abode beyond Jordan. And why did Dan remain in ships? Asher continued on the seashore and abode in his breeches. Zebulun and Naphtali were people that jeoparded their lives unto the death in the high places of the field. The king came and fought. Then fought the king of Canaan in Tanath by the waters of Megiddo. They took no gain of money. They fought from heaven. The stars in their courses fought against Sisera. Rivers of Kishon swept them away. That ancient river, the river Kishon. O my soul, thou hast trodden down strength. Then were their horse hooves broken by the means of the prancing of their mighty ones. Curse ye, Meroz, said the angel of the Lord. Curse ye bitterly the inhabitants thereof, because they came not to help of the Lord, to help the Lord against the mighty. Blessed above all women shall Jael the wife of Heber the Kenite be. Blessed shall she be above women in the tent. He asked water. She gave him milk. She brought forth butter in a lordly dish. We didn't read that earlier, but she must have brought him something to eat as well. Put her hand to the nail. She put her hand to the nail, her right hand to the workman's hammer. And with the hammer, she smote Sisera. She smote off his head. I'm not told that earlier as well, that she actually cut his head off. When she had pierced and strengthened through his temples, at her feet he bowed, he fell, he lay down. At her feet he bowed, he fell where he bowed. There he fell down dead. The mother of Sisera looked out of the window and cried through the lattice, "Why is his chariot so long in coming? Why tarry the wheels of his chariot?" Goes on to tell why possibility that happened. Ladies answered, she returned and answered herself, "Have they not sped? Have they not divided the prey?" You know, they would stop and divide the spoils and those kind of things. To Sisera, and the prey of divers colors, needleworks, different types of clothing, things that would be first taken for spoil and be distributed out. Anyway, the end of it is the land had rest for 40 years. Okay. Thank you very much. Did make it.